Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are, a minute and a half past the hour as we begin a brand new broadcast week for the final week of the month of April 2017. It is the 24th day of April 2017. It is a Monday, and that means it's Moran Monday, and some days you don't know where to begin. Some days you just you feel like you could just reach into a hat or anything along those lines, because you're covered up in morions, and we are. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to jump into the madcap multimedia zany real time wacky extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you so choose, you just go to, just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately, apparently it was a long weekend and folks are a little slow getting in this evening, but you'll be immediately greeted by VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third stage guild navigator on a lightly rainy day in Northern California has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is a listener-supported broadcast endeavor, and I invite you, if you haven't lately, to please feel free to jump in, help us keep this little broadcast effort on the air. You know, we try to raise $200 every evening, just to keep all the plates spinning and the packets passing and the tubes tubing and whatever. And we pulled up a little bit short last week, and over the weekend we got some help from our subscribers, although this is the thin side of the month. We did get help from our subscribers, also got some help from Deb, got some help from Joy, and so I can proudly announce that we have only $270 to raise this evening. We're at the hole's only $70 deep, so I don't have to holler for Lassie to haul me out of the reverb well. So hopefully one at 270, two at 135, four at 6750. Stand by, please. Sorry, had to confer with Ferg there for a minute. Happens. Anyway, if you'd like to help us keep the program on the air, Run over to headonradionetwork.com. Click on the tab Contribute. Thank you, Larry, by the way, for becoming a brand new subscriber. Thank you very kindly indeed. If you'd like to become a subscriber yourself, we sure could use a whole passel of them. I mean, we're still trying to find $410 a month subscribers. There's just a little box there at the PayPal interface under the Contribute tab. Make this a recurring monthly donation. Click it, forget it, you're done. And if you'd like to just, you know, help out, you know, catch as catch can, that's cool too. But it would be great if we could, you know, actually do that. If you prefer the United States mail, well, then you can always go. You can always do checks and money orders to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. That's the mailing address. And that's how it works if you want to use the United States Postal Service, which is certainly nice. Okay, so we've taken care of that part. And like I said, beginning of the week, hopefully we'll get it all knocked down, and the month ends a week from yesterday, so we have to make our fundraising goal all this week if we want to actually lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky, because that's one of those things that goes on. It's another one of those building challenges. Lick the Lithuanian courtesy of Marcy and nudge the Norsky courtesy of Chris in Germany. Traveling in Paris this weekend, by the way, Chris is. And I got some lovely photographs from the Louvre and some food porn, too. Yay. Someday I'll participate in food porn again and eat something besides yogurt and cottage cheese. Yum, yum. So, but anyway, thanks everybody. Hopefully we will finish off the week to the good and be able to lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky. Okay, so it is, well, let's do this right. Yeah. Okay. Because there's a thing we do that marks Moran Mondays, and the thing we do is this.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear all manner of Morans assembled for your amazement, your disturbance, your stunned disbelief. We've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, libertarians, Republicans all, one and all, for you to stand and listen to in slack-jawed, fly-catching amazement. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. It's a bargain here off the Midway, but they don't charge us the usual carnival prices for being on the Midway, because we're not on the Midway, we're off the Midway. And therefore, for a $10 a month supporter to the program, well, it works out to less than 6.5 cents per hour of program over the course of a long, long, Moran-filled year. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hurry, 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 hurry.
Now, don't stand there throwing ping pong balls at that little goldfish bowl, hoping to take home an iguana. Come over here where there's lizard brains oh plenty inside the Moran Monday tent. Yes, you do want to be a little careful going inside the Moran Monday tent, as the Morans can get grabby. Yes, they can. Yes, they can. Keep an eye, keep a hand, a close eye on young'uns and pets and even the iguana if you manage to win one. And keep a close hand on wallets, purses, watches, jewelry, European-style messenger bags. Because, after all, they are, remember, Republicans. And they'll steal anything that ain't nailed down. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You will. Like I said, this is one of those days where you scarcely begin know where to begin in regard to Morans. Somewhere along the way, we're going to deal with we're going to deal with the AP interview of Comrade Kumquat. I mean, it's like I don't know. It's like. I don't know, it's like reading that interview is like sniffing glue and reading Faulkner. I kid you not. It was horrible. Wait, no, you got to say it, Trumpy. Horrible, horrible. Right? Yeah. Horrible. So, we're off and running. Now, let's pick out a couple of other Morans just along the way before we get into the meat of the program, shall we do? Mm-hmm. I know many in the Horn Family Community Congregation turn up their noses and sneer and look away at the barest mere mention of sport. I mean, we've got the occasional baseball fan, we got some NFL fans, we got some NBA fans, we got some college ball fans. But we're progressive, so we're not supposed to care about such plebeian matters. One of the sports I don't much care about is tennis. You will not catch me paying a lot of attention to tennis. I mean, and you know what? I'm open to criticism here because I'll watch golf on television given the opportunity. Oh, by the way, I'm obviously, this program is live. Did I mention that? Yes, because I gave the date and everything. It's the 24th of April and all of that. I had a surgical consult this morning, and, it's still kind of disturbing and don't really know what to do and no insurance coverage and all of that stuff. But, so what? That just makes me one of millions, if not tens of millions of Americans. But one of the things I was told was, by the way, do you golf? I said, been known to, haven't in a while. He said, well, don't start. Because apparently if I was to, and oddly enough, I was thinking, it'd be kind of nice to get out on the golf course. Because, see, golf is exercise for me. When you're as bad a golfer as I am, you swing those clubs 172 times in 18 holes, and by God, you've done something. When you're only supposed to be swinging them like 72 times, including putting, which isn't really swinging. But apparently, if I was to get all froggy and try to really, really knock the daylights out of that wee little golf ball, I could make my spleen explode, which I would like not to do, because apparently you're not long for this world when that happens. All kinds of weird stuff. So I finished, I told you that I was reading a 4-novel, that's why it's a tetralogy, isn't it? Set by the Japanese author Yukio Mishima. And I finished it this weekend. Let's see, what was it? Spring Snow, Runaway Horses... Something and the decay and decaying angels. The decay of the angel. And, okay, so it's not really a spoiler. But it covers the series of books. Yes, there are going to be more ends involved. Please trust me. The books concern a guy and a Japanese man. It's a Japanese novel. I mean, come on. It's a Japanese novel. It concerns a Bolivian man. No. Who, and covers a time span of roughly 1912 to 1974. And it doesn't spoil anything to say that by the time you get to the end of the fourth book, he's an 81-year-old guy. You know, do the math. 74, 64, 62. Yep, works. Anyway, so you get to the end of the book, and he's 81 years old, and he goes to the doctor. Now, bear in mind, this book went off to the publishers on November the 25th, 1970, or something like that. And the next day, the author committed seppuku. I know. Never mind. It doesn't have anything to do with it. I'm just establishing that there's no possibility. So I get to the end of the book, and just as a sort of ancillary note, the old man who has been at the center of the book goes to the doctor and finds out he's got a benign tumor on his pancreas. And I'm like, son of a bitch! Really? He couldn't, you know, have, like, liver damage or lung cancer or something that... Daggummit! But no, that was that. And then, of course, like I said, I was told today... because of these things on my pancreas and spleen, not to go golfing, because it could make my spleen go boom and make me go dead. So no golf for me. But speaking of golf, on a couple of fronts, you know, when you go to the Waffle House. And granted, the Waffle House is not a national phenomenon, but there are enough folks who know what the Waffle House is to know what I mean when I say scattered, smothered, and covered. That's how you get your hash browns. You get them, they scatter them on the grill. They smother them in cheese. No, they smother them in onions and cover them in cheese. And then you can get them scattered, smothered, covered, and diced. And I think that's the ham. And I mean, there's this long litany of how you can get your hash browns. But apparently, it's going to become necessary. No longer will one order one's hash browns scattered, smothered, and covered. One should now order one's hash browns sliced, hooked, shanked, hacked, topped, and chili dipped. For the non-golfers in the community, those are all references to how to hit a golf ball poorly. This is actually a public service on the part of the Horn Family Community Congregation. If you are somewhere that has Harris Teeter grocery stores, you want to eschew, which means to avoid as if harmful, you want to eschew the 2-pound bags of Harris Teeter brand frozen Southern style hash browns. These 2-pound bags of Harris Teeter brand frozen Southern style hash browns are sold in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, the District of Columbia, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, and Maryland. Why? Well, because they've been recalled. Why? Because these particular hash browns have hunks of golf ball in them. Yes, you heard that right. Golf balls. McCain Foods manufactures them. They're also recalling 2-pound bags of Roundy's brand frozen Southern-style hash browns from Mariano's, Metro Market, and Pick and Save supermarkets in Illinois and Wisconsin. The back of the packaging production codes is B170119. Contaminated products should be thrown away or returned to the place of purchase, but above all, not kept for evidentiary purposes in the freezer. McCain Foods has not replied to requests for comment. This is not an April Fool's joke. This is not from The Onion. I researched it. It's real. This is not fake news. Definitely fake news. Slow in the driveway. No, this is real news. This is what we like to call corporate self-regulation in action. You remember corporate self-regulation. That's where we would have standards for the production of foods to be consumed by the American people, and we simply trust the producers of food to police themselves and regulate themselves and make sure no pieces of golf balls get in the hash browns because, you know, regulations kill jobs. Just ask the Republicans and just ask, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius. Can't have any regulations because those kill jobs, while on the other hand, if you get a big hunk of fucking Titleist caught in your throat, that might kill you, but you're just you and you're not an entire economy, and regulations kill jobs. Two-pound bags of Harris Teeter and McCain Foods hash browns. Two, not four. I can just imagine looking at, well, in a former day when I ate such things, looking at Agnes and saying, "My goodness gracious, dear. Those were some top-flight hash browns," and have her look at me and go, "How'd you know?" Ah, it was the sirloin cover. Chewy. So, just okay. There, let's say you've got a hash brown factory. How do you get pieces of golf ball in the hash browns? What, the potato field in Idaho is next to a golf course? And just when they're out there with the great big machine that digs up the potatoes, a few golf balls get in, and somehow or another in the self-regulating, self-policing process, because but we can't have the government inspecting hash brown potatoes. My God, how could you ever have small government like the founders intended in the Constitution if you were out there having government workers inspect the hash browns to make sure there's no goddamn golf balls in them? How's that happen? I mean, did the CEO come back from a really exciting weekend of golfing down at that bed bug infested flea bag Doral golf club that Trump owns, or maybe there at that the 13 food violations in the restaurant that we use to actually feed heads of state restaurant at Mar-a-Lago, and he was so wiped out he just set his bag down and a few of his practice balls just tumbled out into the great big vat of shredded potatoes?
I'm kind of beat here. So if it happens that you've been to Harris Teeter or to Mariano's Metro Market or Pick and Save supermarkets in Illinois and Wisconsin, and your hash browns just seem a little chewy, well, you know what? Spit it out and take a mulligan. Go and get a different bag of hash browns, not some other brand. Like I said, it's just a public service. Does anybody even know what happens if you eat golf ball? I can't imagine it's good for you. Probably all kinds of toxins go into golf ball making. But really, what kind of inspection do they have that they didn't notice they had golf balls in the hash browns? Oh, yeah, Bob, this is the free market. You don't want to be criticizing the free market, Bob. Somebody's liable to think you're a commie for not wanting. I mean, it seems like every day we get a little closer to living Catch-22. This is Milo. This is Milo handing the chocolate-covered cotton to Yosari and going, can't you at least try to eat it? No! It's cotton! Yeah, but it's in chocolate. The company does report that there have been no indications of any injuries thus far. Do you serve golf ball hash browns with a T? Not T-E-A, T-E-E. Oh, well, I've probably worked that over pretty well. So there's that. Just watch out for the golf ball hash browns. Honest Pete, golf ball hash browns. Watch out for those. And, while we're at it, let's just finish off the... Let's finish off the food warnings. Yeah, no, you don't want to just not eat the hash browns. Don't eat the jalapeno potato chips. Lay's kettle-cooked potato chips, jalapeno flavor, and Miss Vicky's kettle-cooked potato chips. That must be what she started doing after she got done being married to Tiny Tim. Who knew? Frito-Lay voluntarily has recalled the potato chips because one of its suppliers recalled a seasoning blend, which includes jalapeno powder, that may also include not just jalapeno powder, but, you know, salmonella. Because the flavoring powder got all the way out the door before anybody at corporate noticed that there were salmonella, you know, in the jalapeno powder. They'd have a use by date of June 20th or prior. This would be your 12 count of Lay's kettle cooked multi pack snack, 20 count of Frito Lay bold mix, 30 count Miss Vicky's multi pack tray, 30-count Lay's kettle-cooked Mac multi-pack tray, 32-count Miss Vicky's multi-pack box, and you'll know that you got hold of it instead of getting rid of it if you start having fever and gastrointestinal symptoms, including nausea, diarrhea, and vomiting. Those are the symptoms of salmonella poisoning. Yay. Right?
I sure am glad. I sure am glad that we've got responsible corporate citizens out there. And self-policing, who can make sure that things like golf balls and salmonella don't wind up in our potato our potato products. You know, because getting poisoned by your potato chips really takes all the starch out of your snacking fun. I'll wait and see if I get a cowbell for that. So somehow or another, golf entered into this conversation this evening, probably causing lots of people to go, "Oh, fuck it, I'll listen tomorrow." But there's a reason. I don't just do things. Did you happen to read this weekend? I know a couple of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation did. Did you happen to read this weekend the transcript of the Associated Press interview with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini? As I said, this is the damnedest thing I've read since I got hold of the first chapter of William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, or perhaps As I Lay Dying, which is also told by an idiot. Julie Pace, White House correspondent for the Associated Press, sat down for a one-on-one conversation in a room full of also other handlers at the White House with Trump. I presume at the White House. I don't know. It begins thusly and goes downhill. As Charlie Pierce pointed out earlier today, there's a whole bunch of unintelligible, it just parentheses, unintelligible, at which point, you know, Trump was talking to the fillings in his teeth, or that thing that lives under the rug on his head, or who knows, maybe, you know, maybe talking up the barrel of his cuff to, well, no, it couldn't possibly be Russia. Thank you, Asa. Thank you. Double cowbell for starch out of your snack and fun, and them as some top flight taters. The latter was not lost on me, Asa says. Okay, so that's a double. Thank you. Thank you, Asa. Yeah, been waiting to use that top flight line for a day or so now. Anyway, the word unintelligible. And so this is a situation where there's a recorder sitting there really, really close at hand. And so there shouldn't, and everybody knows they're being recorded, so there really shouldn't be cause for a whole bunch of unintelligible. And yet, this interview, as Charlie Pierce noted, is chock-a-block with them. And it starts poorly and goes downhill from there. Julie Pace, Associated Press. "I do want to talk to you about the 100 days.
Good.
I want to ask a few questions on some topics that are happening toward the end of the interview.
Did you see Aya?
Meaning Aya Hijazi, an Egyptian-American charity worker who had been detained in the country for nearly 3 years.
Did you see Aya?
Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about?
No, just, you know, I asked the government to let her out.
You know, Obama worked on it for 3 years, got Zippo. No.
You know, Obama worked on it for 3 years, got Zippo. Zero.
How did you hear about this story?
Many people, human rights people, are talking about it. It's an incredible thing, especially when you meet her. You realize, I mean, she was in a rough place. And remember the incredibly awkward meeting with Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany? Yeah, it's funny. One of the best chemistries I had was with Merkel. Crosstalk. Really? Chancellor Merkel. And I guess somebody shouted out, shake her hand, you know, but I never heard it. But I'd already shaken her hand 4 times, you know, because we were together for a long time. Did you expect you would have good chemistry with her? No, because I'm at odds, you know, NATO payments, I'm at odds on immigration. We had unbelievable chemistry.
Chemistry? Since when do you talk? I mean, that's...
Oh, no, like, you know, we danced several dances and we backward skated. I thought we had really, really incredible chemistry. Mm-hmm. And people have given me credit for having great chemistry with all the leaders, including El-Sisi. So it was a great thing to see that happen.
Read the whole thing. It's over at apnews.com. You'll find it. And you'll also find the unintelligibles and the crosstalks. For instance, they're talking about rebuilding the military. He says, he had to sign the ultimate, you know, he said, I've never seen anything like this before as long as I've been in the military, you know, that kind of cutting. Right. Now, if I can do that, unintelligible. Why would that be unintelligible? I mean, is he just sort of figuring out his name? Are the spirochetes only capable of so much human communication?
Now, if I can do that, as an example, the aircraft carriers, billions of dollars, the Gerald Ford, billions and billions over budget, that won't happen.
Is that something you're going to take on? Trump, unintelligible.
Well, it's slow in the driveway. But as we order the other ones, because they want to order 13, the other ones are going to come in much less expensive.
Julie Pace then asks him how she feels about how the office has changed him.
Well, the one thing I would say, and I say this to people, I never realized how big it was. Everything's so unintelligible. Like, you know, the orders are so massive. I was talking to you.
Mean the responsibility of it, or do you mean...
Number one, there's great responsibility. When it came time to, as an example, send out the 59 missiles, the Tomahawks in Syria, I'm saying to myself, you know, this is more than just like 79 missiles. This is a death that's involved because people could have been killed. This is risk that's involved because if the missile goes off and goes in a city or goes in a civilian area, you know, the boats were hundreds of miles away. And if this missile goes off and lands in the middle of a town or a hamlet.
A hamlet? Really? A hamlet? The spirochetes spooled up Hamlet?
See, I do too have a vocabulary. Every decision much harder than you normally make, unintelligible. This is involving death and life and so many things. So it's far more responsibility, unintelligible. The financial cost of everything is so massive, every agency. This is thousands of times bigger, the United States, than the biggest company in the world. The second largest company in the world is the Defense Department. The third largest company in the world is Social Security. The fourth largest, you know, you down the list.
And just which stock exchange is Social Security traded on, after all? Or the Defense Department? And so, I mean, you've heard a little bit of that. Well, now, let's see how it compares with Faulkner. No. Randy, Out, out, damned spot is that Scottish play. Not Hamlet. So this, I presume a lot of you have read, because this is one of the most intelligent audiences in all of radio. I presume a lot of you have read Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury. The Sound and the Fury opens with a chapter titled April 7th, 1928. And what you find out right away is that it is the narration is being conducted by someone who is severely developmentally delayed, which is the phrase we use now. You might recall that the title is The Sound and the Fury, which is taken from which is a part of a line taken from that Scottish play, Life is a Tale Told by an Idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And idiot is the technical term for what Benji would have been considered to be back then. Benjamin Compson.
Through the fence, between the curling flower spaces, I could see them hitting. They were coming toward where the flag was, and I went along the fence. Luster was hunting in the grass by the flower tree. They took the flag out, and they were hitting. Then they put the flag back, and they went to the table, and he hit, and the other hit. Then they went on, and I went along the fence. Luster came away from the flower tree, and we went along the fence, and they stopped, and we stopped, and I looked through the fence while Luster was hunting in the grass.
Yeah, Caddy.
He hit. They went away across the pasture. I held to the fence and watched them going away.
Listen at you now, Luster said. Ain't you something, 33 years old, going on that way, after I done went all the way to town to buy you that cake? Hush up that moaning. Ain't you going to help me find that quarter so I can go to the show tonight?
They were hitting little across the pasture. I went back along the fence to where the flag was. It flapped on the bright grass and the trees.
Come on, Luster said. We done looked there. There ain't no more coming right now. Let's go down to the branch and find that quarter.
It was red, flapping on the pasture. Then there was a bird slanting and tilting on it. Luster threw. The flag flapped on the bright grass and the trees. I held to the fence. We went along the fence and came to the garden fence where our shadows were. My shadow was higher than Luster's on the fence. We came to the broken place and went through it.
Tell me that is not, I mean, that's Donald Trump. Benji, the idiot, in The Sound and the Fury. It's Donald Trump. It's the same speech process. It's the same disjointed stream of consciousness, unconsciousness, thought process.
We went around the barn. The big cow and the little one were standing in the door, and we could hear Prince and Queenie and Fancy stomping inside the barn. Then we could see the branch where the smoke was blowing. There was a fence. The vine was dry, and the wind rattled in it. Mr. Patterson was chopping in the green flowers. He stopped chopping and looked at me. Mrs. Patterson came across the garden running. When I saw her eyes, I began to cry.
You idiot, Mrs. Patterson said. I told him never to send you alone again. Give it to me.
Quick, Mr. Patterson came fast with the hoe. Mrs. Patterson leaned across the fence, reaching her hand. She was trying to climb the fence. Give it to me, she said. Give it to me. Mr. Patterson climbed the fence. He took the letter. Mrs. Patterson's dress was caught on the fence. I saw her eyes again, and I ran down the hill.
You know, The Sound and the Fury is a masterwork of American literature.
W-
what we have living in the White House right now is a masterwork of nothing. When such time comes as nature catches up with him, as it must catch up with all of us, it would be appropriate if on the stone was written, "His was a tale told by an idiot. His life was a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." I mean, is there any way, and maybe we can talk about this later in the program, for those of you who have read this, is there any way to read this in any other fashion than this is pure, unmitigated idiocy? I mean, it doesn't get any better. I read this thinking, I can't imagine questions like this being asked of Barack Obama. You've talked a little bit about the way you brought some business skills into the office. Is there anything from your business background that just doesn't translate into the presidency that simply is not applicable to this job?
Well, in business, you don't necessarily need heart, whereas here, almost everything affects people. So if you're talking about health care, you have health care and business, but you're trying to just negotiate a good price on health care, et cetera, et cetera. You're providing health. This is unintelligible. Oh, shit. Here, everything, pretty much everything you do in government involves heart, whereas in business, most things don't involve heart.
What's that switch been like for you, Donnie?
In fact, in business, you're actually better off without it.
Now, understand, this guy has never really run a business in his life. And the ones he's tried to, he's run into the ground. We are, after all, still talking about a guy who went to Atlantic City, New Jersey, built a casino, and lost money in a casino. Now, by comparison, in the late 1960s, mid to late 1960s, Hugh Hefner's Playboy empire made the calculated decision to open a Playboy club in London, which would be a casino because casino gambling had been legalized in London. And almost immediately upon opening it, that casino became one of the most profitable, most jam-packed casinos on Earth. You couldn't not make money. Considering the odds of the various and some, you know, the closest you get to even odds in a casino is blackjack. And you can almost get to 50-50. Not quite. Donald Trump tried to run a casino and lost his shirt to the point of bankruptcy. He's never done anything except fool around in real estate. And, you know, even that, he had people underneath him doing the heavy lifting. He just stood there, "I'm definitely a businessman. I'm definitely a businessman, slow in the driveway." He doesn't... It frustrates me that somebody like Julie Pace would help to perpetuate this myth of Donald Trump as genius businessman. What kind of genius businessman goes bankrupt 7 times or more? But there they are.
In fact, in business, you're actually better off without it.
What's making that switch been like for you?
You have to love people. And if you love people, such a big responsibility.
That's the Spyrokeets rebooting, unintelligible.
You can take any single thing, including even taxes.
Now, don't talk about taxes, Donald. No.
I mean, we're going to be doing major tax reform. Here's part of your story. It's going to be a big...
And again, sets to babbling.
Everybody's saying, oh, he's delaying.
I'm not delaying anything.
I'll tell you the other thing is...
More babbling.
I used to get great press. I get the worst press. I get such dishonest reporting with the media. That's another thing that really has... I've never had anything like it before. It happened during the primaries, and I said, you know, when I won, I said, well, the one thing good is now I'll get good press, and it got worse.
Again, Spyrokeet reset. Babbling, mumbling.
So that was one thing that a little bit of surprise to me. I thought the press would become better, and it actually, in my opinion, got more nasty.
I mean, how did Julie Pace not walk out of that interview shaking in her shoes? Utterly terrified for what, never mind the next day, the next hour, the next minute might bring. I mean, this is a guy who's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich shy of a chandelier, okay? I saw a tweet from Lawrence Tribe the other day saying, it might be 25th Amendment time. Is it 25th Amendment time? And you know from what I've said over the last several months, you probably can already hear my, because, you know, I talk to Twitter. Of course it's 25th Amendment time. It's been 25th Amendment time. But who's going to be the first person to raise his or her hand and say, I think it's time to write the letter?
What letter is that?
You know, the letter. The one that says the hesitant prey is azy cray and has to o-gay. Oh, that letter.
Oh, you want to write it? I don't want to write it. No, I thought you'd write it.
Well, I don't want to write it. Let's get Betsy.
No.
No, because she can't write. And so you begin to see the nature of the dilemma.
That's, you know, of course the Moran Monday nomination goes to, you know, Trump.
But does a little itty bitty bitsy bit of the Moran nomination go to the Associated Press?
For normalizing this?
I mean, really? No, I'm not okay with the unintelligible. Does the Associated Press not have enough money to farm the recording out and say, no, really, put some algorithms on this, or put it in the ponerizer and ponerize it for a little bit and see if you can't figure out what the unintelligible mumbling is?
You know what? I want to hear the tape. It's not tape. I want to hear the recording.
Because, again, let's remember that when you go to apnews.com and you read this thing, it's in entirety, and it goes on for a while.
Yeah, with the early notation, where the audio recording of the interview is unclear, ellipses or a notation that the recording was unintelligible are used.
What were they using? One of those 100-year-old wire recorders?
Was this one of Thomas Alva Edison's wax cylinders where you had to scream into the microphone? Scream loudly directly into the microphone, Mr. President. I mean, I understand the difference between on the record and off the record. Can we go off the record? I need a Coke. Yeah, okay, I gotta go potty. Sure. Anybody who's ever read a deposition transcript whereupon a conversation was had off the record, whereupon a break was taken and the record, blah, 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 blah. This isn't that. This is a 70-year-old man who can't string entire sentences together in long form without just sort of wandering off into the swampy, marshy ground of his own mind. This is a guy who has the nuclear codes. This is the guy that the generals will obey when he says, "No, really, I want to nuke Uruguay. Now." Well, sir, I said now, nuke Uruguay. Because you never know when the spirochetes are gonna decide that they've got a hard on for Uruguay. I'm sick and tired of these unfair trade deals. All these unfair trade deals with Mexico. I want to nuke Uruguay. ISIS must be destroyed. Nuke Namibia. Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. President. These are things that I think about. Because they do not seem particularly distantly removed from the realms of reality, or whatever passes for reality in the spirochete convention inside Donald J. Trump's skull. So let's take a break, shall we? We've got more morons, but we haven't talked for a couple of days. That's what weekends are. Two long days of enforced silence for me, and 2 days that you and I aren't talking. If you would like to engage in some conversation, I would find that just fine and dandy. How to reach the program? Well, if you don't already know, there are two phone numbers. The stress line is area code 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. And the other line is 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. If we're already hooked up as contacts on Skype, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, and we'll be right into the thick of things. Kelly just sent me a note, subject line, transcript. I read it today, all caps, scared. Well, fear is not always an irrational response, Kelly. I was horrified. Horrified. And when you compare that with some of the other stuff, well, what the latest talk is that new North Korean nuclear test could just be any day now. They're also threatening to sink the Carl Vinson, by the way. North Korea is. If I lived in Uruguay, I'd be heading for the bunkers. That's all I can say. Freight Train Frank suggests that whenever we use the phrase job killing regulations, that we go to the reverb. I think you're right. I think you're right, Frank. Okay, so break time. And we are an hour into this More and Monday program, and we are at zero of $270 yet to raise. It would be great if we were not in a $470 hole tomorrow. Don't everybody wait for somebody to get started first. Sometimes you just got to take the plunge. So we can end the month of April and lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky. Okie doke, okie doke. By the way, note coming from the Mac. Going back to the golf ball flavored potatoes and the salmonella flavored potato chips. The Mac simply says, have the processors of food already started to roll back inspections? It's a jungle out there. I see what you did there. Upton Sinclair's The Jungle? Yes. They haven't started. They've been self-inspecting for quite some time now. And let's be fair, this is not something you can lay off entirely on Republicans. The Obama administration got into the act, too. Yep. All right, then. Break time. You know how to reach the program if you want to. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Let us see an LZ in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass. We getting wild. Check phone. Get the last word. I don't understand the whole reason why you're telling us all that we need to unify. Rally around the flag and beat the drums of war. Sing the same old songs, we heard them all before. You're telling me it's unpatriotic, but I call it when I see it. When I see it's idiotic. The tears of one mother are the same as any other. Drop food on your kids while you're murdering the fathers. But don't bother to show it on CNN. Brothers and sisters, don't believe them that it's a war against evil. It's really just revenge engaged on the poor. By the same rich men fight terrorists wherever they be found. But why you not bombing Tim McVeigh's hometown? You can say what you want, propaganda television. But all bombing is terrorism. Chase down all our enemies. We can bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. What we can bomb it into. Whoa, we may even find a solution, to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Tell them, 911, fire in disguise, many people died, no one even really knows why. They told lies in the vision of fear. We yelled and cried, no one listened for years. We're like, who put us here? And who's responsible? Well, there's no debating, cause if they ask me, I'll say it's big corporations. World Trade Organization, trilateral action, international sanctions. Satan, seems like it'll be an endless price tag of wars, tremendous. And most disturbingly, the death toll is so horrendous. So I send this to those that say they defend us. Send us into harm's way, we should all make a remembrance that this is bigger than terrorism. Blood is blood is blood in them. Love is true vision. Who would listen? How many songs it takes for you to see? You can bomb the world in pieces. You can't bomb it into peace.
We can chase down all our enemies. Run, run. Bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces.
Come on,
but we can't bomb it into peace.
hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. So we can chase down all our enemies. Run, run. We can even bring them to their knees.
Michael Franti and Spearhead from a number of years back, and Bomb the World. It is 6 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn from Moran Monday. And thank you very kindly to Dan in L.A. Dan got us started this evening, so that means we only got $245 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very, very very, very kindly. Alma loved that song. Again, Michael Franti and Spearhead, Bomb the World. Glad you liked it, Alma. Glad you liked it very much. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Nick. Hey, Nick.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Well, I haven't talked to you since the election, so... I guess I'm calling. I need a little bit of therapy, you know.
Well, you know what? We can help each other if there's any help to be had.
You know, I'm having a hard time dealing with a full flower of fascism in the United States of America, but that's what we got. So
yeah, yeah. Oh, it's here. It's here.
I was going to say, when you first started that no collaboration radio, I was surprised nobody else commented. It seemed like it was right then that Turner Classic Movie Channel was running documentaries on Mondays, and they were showing the sorrow and the pity. So I was thinking, you know, the flying spaghetti monster or something was out with its noodles grabbing a hold of that, because it's sorrow and the pity and no collaboration radio right here in the United States of America.
Well, I still hold to the theory behind that, Nick. That's why I respect people like Maxine Waters, because she's not having any of it, and she's not going to be fooled by any of it either.
Right, and then you got, on the other side of it, you got, what was it, Leo Girard, the steelworker, you know, president.
Yeah, wasn't that a little disturbing?
What's that?
I said, wasn't that a little bit disturbing?
Yes. Yes, but not really all that shocking.
No, well, you kind of wish it had been, but no, it wasn't.
Yeah, so, you know, I definitely need the therapy, because, you know, I agree with about 99% of the things you say anyway, and then the 1% makes me think, well, gee, what do I have wrong?
Yeah, but hey, Nick, I mean, you're in Minnesota, man.
What's that?
You're in Minnesota.
Right.
I mean,
right,
you're in a place that's still relatively sane, albeit, you know, right, freaking frigid. Well, not even that frigid anymore,
you know,
is it?
You know, the other morning, I woke up, and the first thing I thought about, though, was Steve Cantaloupe Kings, and I was like, what a disturbing way to wake up in the morning. It's the first thing you think about, and I was wondering if back in the, you know, 30s, if there were German citizens waking up thinking about some Nazi guy, you know, and that'd be the first thing that they thought about, too, probably.
Well, there were people who knew what a hell on earth was opening, and they tried to get out as quickly as they possibly could. But the problem, the problem was the number of people, not who were actively supportive, but who quietly, you know, who just kind of quietly went along.
Right.
It's kind of like what Dr. King said in Letter from Birmingham Jail, when he said, "I've come to believe that our problem isn't the white supremacists who so vocally oppose us, but rather the moderate whites who say, well, yeah, we agree with you, but, you know, now's not the time." And that stuff is toxic.
Yeah.
And so the people, you know, and I see it all the time. The people who work so assiduously to normalize Trump, when there is nothing, absolutely nothing normal about him. I'm trying not to pound on the table. Those people are the ones who are perpetuating the problems.
It's really hard for the mainstream media to grasp that. You know, it really is. I mean, you know, it's like they think that we're like crazy to like call him a fascist or whatever, you know. I mean, they want to treat him like a regular president, and it's like no, it's not.
Yeah, you know? This but is not normal.
To grasp that.
Look, having an attorney general who wants to go hammer and tongs at the First Amendment, having an education secretary who never went to school, doesn't know anything about education except for the fact that she hates the fact that she's the head of a Department of Education and would just as well see it done in. I mean, these are signs. And whether it's the morning programs or the evening programs, anybody who is out there saying, well, you know, he's president of the United States now, so we have to pretend he's normal. You know, screw that, Nick.
Yeah. You know, a while back, I think you were talking to Arnold in Pennsylvania, and this is a couple of general truisms that, you know, since I haven't called in a while, the one thing that you've always focused on and alluded to sort of as a general truism, but I think more attention might need to be placed on it, is like, as you know, you basically would say, as long as people still have their cable plugged in, they're not really going to do anything. You know, life is still good as long as you still got your cable TV.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably sadly true. It took the Great Depression in order for, you know, for FDR to come along. And right now I don't see, there's too many people that still got their cable TV plugged in.
Well, and it's not, I mean, it's not just that. Do you remember back in the, well, maybe, I don't know how old you are. But back in the 80s,
I'm a couple years older than you, Bob.
Okay, so you're going to be down with this. Remember back in the 80s, in the full flower of the cocaine problem, there was a scientific study that showed that laboratory rats exposed to cocaine would happily starve to death to get cocaine. They would just, they'd just do coke till they died. Well, I think to a certain extent, our desire to amuse ourselves to death is the same thing. we would joyfully sit in front of the TV or the internet. I mean, the internet is largely is in many ways replacing television.
Right.
And as long as we were amused, as long as we can keep clicking things on Facebook, keep tweeting, and I recognize the inherent hypocrisy in me talking about this because I do both, but I try to walk away from it some. But this getting something truly massive out of the phrase that Steve in China used, I think Friday night, the lumpen proletariat, is going to be very, very difficult. Because yeah. Because the American people are disinclined toward upsetting the apple cart. What we want to be is banal and amused. We don't want to think about the hard realities. We like to think that everything that happens, you know, somewhere else. And that we can therefore insulate ourselves against it. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And it's, it's like it's going to take something. It's going to take something massive, I think. Like Snork was saying, if actually all the truck drivers were to lose their job, or something, you know, to that effect, where there's a real crisis. Otherwise we're getting, you know, sucked in deeper and deeper into this mess. I'm getting very pessimistic about it.
Well, and you can't very well cite something like, you know, everybody, all the truckers losing their job or something like that. Because you don't want to wish that on anybody. I mean, that was the problem with the "Burn Baby Burn" segment of the people who during the Great Recession wanted to just let it all burn down.
Right.
Well, you know, whose granny are you sacrificing in that process?
Right. Right. It's sort of like the Jill Steiner people too. I mean, that it doesn't matter if Hillary, it doesn't matter whether it's Hillary or Trump. Let's go with the apocryph. No, I'm not saying that. You know, it's funny because when I was in graduate school, a fellow student, he was exceptionally smart, bright. But in this one case, you know, he was an out and out socialist. And in this one case, he had voted for Reagan, and it was like the same thing.
Dude, we're gonna bring on the revolution. Yeah.
It was the same thing as voting for Trump. Now it was the same thing back in 1980.
Well,
wanted the apocryph to come, and I was like, well, thinking, what did that get him back in 1980? The same thing as the stupid people that voted for Trump this week.
Not a damn thing. And you know, the same thing. I mean, I think about. I think about that hopeless dipshit Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
Who was like, no, you know, because Trump will bring on the apocryph. I mean, she said the same kind of crazy crap. Utterly oblivious to the nature of the American people. So, same idea, different generation, same result.
Yeah,
Nick, it's always good hearing from you. You really shouldn't wait so long between calls, buddy. Okay.
And a shout out to Arnold if he's listening. I wish he'd call more often too, because the last time you guys talked, I found it rather enlightening. So.
Well, I have a feeling Arnold probably is. I'll probably get a text message from him.
Not that all your callers don't enlighten me, but I found that last phone call of his quite fascinating.
Well, it was a great call. And see, But you yourself, you know, remember, therapy is easier when it is more regular.
Gotcha.
So, okay.
Gotcha, Bob.
All right, Nick, you have yourself a great night.
All right, you too now.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
In Minnesota, that's our buddy Nick. 21 minutes after the hour. See how easy that is? You can get in on the conversation if you wish. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. So, like I said, Moran Monday is, well, sometimes you just got to stack and you don't really begin to know how to get through them. Here's a nomination of Sammy Alito. Remember when Sammy Alito was nominated to the court? And many of us progressives said, you know, this is not going to bode well. And they went ahead and put him on the court anyway after Robert C. Byrd stood up and said, I've received many, many letters with coffee stains and donut sugar on them from my constituents saying that they want Judge Alito confirmed because they know they'll protect their right to worship Jesus. When there's no threat to the right to religious rights, religious liberties in this country whatsoever, except the ones that exist inside the minds of grifters like Matt Staver and Pat Robertson and that ilk. And never mind the fact that Robert C. Byrd could never have gotten those letters in the first place because it takes about 6 weeks. It took about 6 weeks for a letter to clear the Postal Service into the Capitol. But that, he said it, and, you know, Robert Byrd has his pulse on the finger on the pulse of West Virginia. Right. So Alito got in onto the court despite the fact that he had done such heinous things in his judicial past as a member of the Circuit Court of Appeals, as giving the A-OK to shooting a fleeing black kid in the head at some 30 feet distance as the kid, like, you know, tried to climb a fence and get away and the cops just blew his brains out. And Sammy Alito said, well, it's okay. You can shoot a fleeing unarmed black kid in the back of the head. Why is there a problem? Why is this even a case? Well, everything old is new again. The court has ruled on a case called Salazar Limon versus City of Houston. It's one of those cases where you got a guy who is not immediately sympathetic to a jury or whatnot. Because Salazar Limon was pulled over by the Houston Police Department when he was driving drunk. He got pulled over. The cop went to arrest Salazar Limon. He was less than cooperative. He got free of the cop as the cop tried to handcuff him and started to walk back to his truck. And that's when the cop shot him in the back. Shoot him in the back, Gomez! Shoot him in the back! Now, Mr. Salazar Limon, in this era before dash cams, most likely, said that he was shot immediately, within seconds of, stop or I'll bang! You know, it was like that on the part of the cop. On the other hand, the cop said, no, I ordered him to stop, and then he raised his hands toward his waistband, like he was going for a gun. Is it a police academy thing where every trainee cop has to watch that scene with Jack Palance from Shane where he says, pick up the gun. Pick up the gun. Pick
pick up the gun. And then the guy picks up the gun and he shoots him and he says, you all saw he had a gun. I mean, does every police academy attendee, student, whatever, student cop, have to watch that scene? And that's because one of the things that Justice Sonia Sotomayor pointed out is that, oddly enough, it seems there's a lot of cops shooting civilians cases out there. In a footnote, she said, some commentators have observed the increasing frequency of incidents in which unarmed men allegedly reach for empty waistbands when facing armed officers. That's a pretty sharp rebuke coming from a Supreme Court justice. That's Supreme Court speak for, I don't believe this shit for 1 minute. But that's what the cop said happened, and then he shot him in the back. Justice Sotomayor was the dissenting voice in the case. Justice Sammy Alito, on the other hand, who once gave the A-OK to shooting a fleeing black kid in the back of the head at when there was no danger whatsoever to the police officer. Well, he wrote, whether or not one agrees with the grant of summary judgment in favor of Officer Thompson, it is clear that the lower courts acted responsibly and attempted faithfully to apply the correct legal rule to what is at best a marginal set of facts. Marginal. A marginal set of facts. A man is crippled for life because he was shot in the back by a cop in a state of being, you know, unarmed and not having a gun in his waistband. So this case was about whether or not the court did, the lower court, the trial court, did the right thing in granting something called summary judgment. A summary judgment is granted when there is no material issue of law or fact to be decided at a trial. And so the lower court gave victory to the cops, Houston PD, as a matter of summary judgment. Now, obviously, there was an issue of material fact as to whether or not the guy had a gun, whether or not the guy was, whether or not the cop waited and said stop or I'll bang, or whether it was instantaneous or there was a period of time that passed. Those are all material and they're all facts. Not according to Sammy Alito. No. Alito says that he needs to just go and lay around and die, you know, preferably sooner rather than later, because cops can do no wrong in Samuel Alito's nasty little right-wing fascist world. Because Sammy Alito is a fascist. Nice, huh? Well, it gets better. It turns out, yeah, this is a real doozy. Time magazine did a feature on Sammy Alito. And Sammy Alito actually told them that he had a dog, a Springer Spaniel. Spaniel? No. Springer Spaniel named Zeus. Zeus. And when Sammy Alito, and yeah, oh, wait a minute. I gotta do it. Here's a cowbell for Anatole, who said the cop went, ready, fire, aim. Yes. According to the article in Time Magazine, which is in turn according to the very words of Sammy Alito himself, I guess you could say, Anatole, yes, our country is suffering from halitosis. Ah, there's another one. In a story by Kate Samuelson, dated April 21st, 2017, in Time, she writes, Justice Samuel Alito revealed he used to have a rather unusual decision-making process that involved his late Springer Spaniel, again with the Spaniel, Spaniel Zeus. I'm trying to get to the ooh in Zeus before I get past the nul in Spaniel. Speaking to D. Brooks Smith, Chief Judge of the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, in a conversation reported on by the Wall Street Journal, Alito revealed that he used to test out ideas on his dog before he passed away. Almost makes you wonder if he shot Zeus in the back. And that's why he passed away. No, Alito said, late at night when I was thinking about cases, I would test out my ideas with Zeus. He generally agreed with me. If he was stuck on a particular case, he had a special way of making a decision. I put the red brief, which is the respondent's brief, over here, and the blue petitioner's brief over there, equal distance from Zeus, and I'd put a few dog treats on both. Then I would let Zeus go. If he went to the blue brief, then we would reverse. He even went so far as to say that he used that method in making his decision in a 2010 case called U.S. v. Stevens. In U.S. v. Stevens, he was the only person who dissented in the case. And it was apparently because of Zeus's intervention. The only dissenter. You know what the ruling in U.S. v. Stevens was? It was an animal cruelty case. And the Supreme Court majority ruled that a federal law, that banned animal cruelty depictions . They said that violated the First Amendment freedom of speech guarantee. Alito said that it, and Zeus said that it didn't. But apparently that wasn't the only case that Zeus decided. Now, I've got as good or better a sense of humor than anybody, I think, than anybody out there. I love a great comedian. I love the great comedians of the past, the great comedians of the present. You can laugh your ass off at George Burns, and laugh your ass off at Red Fox. The physical comedy of W.C. Fields, the verbal shenanigans of the Marx Brothers, even the Three Stooges. Still fresh and still funny today. Modern comedians like Lewis Black. The titans of comedy. George Carlin. Richard Pryor. Lenny Bruce. I appreciate comedy. Sometimes you just really need a good laugh. I don't particularly want a funny Supreme Court justice. See, I let my dog decide the cases for me. That's how come I decided it was all right for that Houston cop to... Nah, I mean, Zeus is dead now. Maybe he's doing it with a cat or a gerbil or... Now, cats would be useless in that, wouldn't they? I mean, hell, that one German zoo let an octopus pick out World Cup winners, right? What the hell? Why not? If she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood, and therefore a witch. We already have a crisis of confidence in the judiciary in the United States. Sammy Bad Breath Alito is not helping matters any by saying that he let his dog decide Supreme Court cases for us. But then again, can you imagine the outcry? Can you imagine? It would have been wall to wall, 24-hour day, 7 days a week. Get a rope! If that had been something Sonia Sotomayor or Justice Breyer or Justice Kagan or Justice Ginsburg had said. But then again, when it comes right down to it, when it comes to right-wing judicial philosophy, yeah, a trained dog could pretty much do it. Because whatever screws working people, whatever advances corporatism, whatever advances the wealth class in this country, that's how your Gorsuches and your Robertses and your Alitos and your Thomases are going to vote. The whole process up there is largely a sham. You got somebody that was hurt? You got somebody that's been maimed? Oh, well, we're going to have oral arguments on this one. Why? Because the right wingers are going to just fuck them as hard and as deep as they possibly can, because constitutional originalism. Yeah? Yeah. Jesus. Come here, Zeus. Here's Zeus, boy. Here. Yeah. Here's the injured guy's brief. Shit on it. Shit on it, Zeus. Shit on it. There you go, boy. Pinch off a good one. Atta boy, Zeusie. God damn.
Oh, he's just joking, Bob.
It ain't. Not even a little bit. Like I said, we got lots and lots of morons for this evening. And speaking of the Supreme Court, guess what the first thing Neil Gorsuch did once he got to the Supreme Court was? The very first thing. No, he didn't go to the little justice's room. The very first thing Neil Gorsuch did was make sure that a man in Arkansas got murdered by the state. Hoo-wee! That is some serious jurisprudence. In a 5-4 vote, the justices rejected an emergency application brought by a number of inmates in Arkansas before they executed Liddell Lee. Mm-hmm. And Justice Gorsuch?
Ooh, pick me.
Justice Gorsuch, wait your turn. Okay, Justice. Kill him
real good. Yeah, kill him. Maybe make him freeze to death a little bit first. Kill him. Ooh, can you bring me the body? I want to eat some. With some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And so this week, he'll get to vote to kill some more people. And guess what he'll do? He'll vote to kill them. Because, I mean, why not? Yeah. Oh, by the way, just in case you're wondering, some of the people that Arkansas wants to kill. Yeah, it's a little disturbing. One of the guys had as his trial lawyer a lawyer who was openly drunk. And I'm not talking about had a beer with lunch. I'm talking about staggering, stumbling, commode-hugging drunk. Guy was so drunk that he kept reintroducing the same piece of evidence time after time after time after time. Couple of them are not going to get to have DNA testing. Even though they might be, not guilty. Oh, well. Kill him! That's what Gorsuch will say. Kill him real good. Nail him up. Nail him up, I say. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Another inmate in Alabama, James McWilliams, has been sentenced to death on counts of rape, robbery, and murder. His lawyers have argued that he has a right, a constitutional right, to an independent medical expert to see whether or not he's mentally disabled. If he is, the state of Alabama wouldn't get to murder him. You know what Gorsuch will say? Kill him! Kill him up! Can you record it so I can hear him scream? Because I'm a constitutional originalist! God almighty. These are some seriously sick bastards. Bad sick. You can almost imagine the chuckling there among Roberts and Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch and, Kennedy, because he might be the swing vote on some stuff, but the killing people, I mean, he's a good Catholic. Can we not burn him at the stake? Good Christian. Note coming in from James. Subject line, Alito's dog. These fascists tell these stories to let us know that they're fucking us and that they're going to keep at it ad infinitum. We now have three sitting justices who should not be there, as they were all appointed by illegitimate presidents. Yep, old Balls and Strikes Roberts, Sammy Bad Breath, and Ann's boy Neil. Yep. Randy in PA says, I estimate there's a 15% chance that this is all a bad dream. But I guess that's what the Germans thought in 1930. Well, you know, if you want to get your Hindu on, they'll tell you that this is all illusion. I don't know how I feel about that. But on the odd chance that it's not all a bad dream, it might be a good idea to go ahead and oppose these bloodthirsty bastards at every turn. Oh, and by the way, just in case you're feeling alone, kind of, you know, Nick called in, said it felt like therapy. And going back to the whole Trump transcript thing, you might be interested to know that last Thursday, 35 psychiatrists got together at a conference at Yale University. Speaking for the group, Dr. John Gartner said, "We have an ethical responsibility to warn the public about Donald Trump's dangerous mental illness." Now, Dr. Gartner is, he's not sitting there behind his little lemonade stand with the doctor is in. He's not a character from a comic strip. He's actually a real psychotherapist. He's, among other things, been an advisor and to psychiatric residents at Johns Hopkins Medical School. Among other things, he's referred to Donald J. Trump as a psychiatric Frankenstein monster. Explaining the consensus among the psychiatrists gathered at Yale, he said, "Worse than just being a liar or a narcissist, in addition, he," meaning Trump, "is paranoid, delusional, and grandiose thinking. And he proved to the country the first day that he was president." He said, "If Donald Trump really believes he had the largest crowd sized in history, that's delusional." Then there's Dr. James Gilligan. He's a psychiatrist, also a professor at NYU. He said he is more than a little bit queasy at the behavior he's witnessed coming from the President of the United States, the man with access to enough nuclear weapons to roast every human being on this planet. Dr. James Gilligan said, "I've worked with murderers and rapists. I can recognize dangerousness from a mile away." You don't have to be an expert on dangerousness or spend 50 years studying it like I have in order to know how dangerous this man is. Then there's Dr. Bandy Lee, assistant clinical professor at the Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Lee said there was no way that a clinician could stay silent looking at all the evidence of Donald J. Trump's vast mental illness. He said, as some prominent psychiatrists have noted, Trump's mental illness is the elephant in the room. I think the public's really starting to catch on and widely talk about this now. One hopes. But once again, we can talk about it till hell freezes over. That is a far cry from doing something about it. Because the do something about it part is something that where illness and incapacity to perform the duties of the office are concerned, that's only remediable by 25th Amendment, by the 25th Amendment. You know, if he would do something illegal, you know, a high crime or a misdemeanor as a result of his mental illness, that would be different. That would bring in impeachment as a possibility. But just being a fork shy of a wagon load? No. For that, the only thing that'll do is the 25th Amendment. And that's frightening because you really just can't see Betsy DeVos stepping up and getting out her writing crayon and writing the 25th Amendment letter upon which to which fully half of the cabinet have to add their names. By the way, it's been out there for a while, but there is an online petition at change.org. Trump is mentally ill and must be removed. At present, it's got only 41,000 signatures. But then again, it's only for mental health professionals. 41,000 mental health professionals, assuming they're all telling the truth, have signed a petition that says, "We, the undersigned mental health professionals, please state your degree, believe in our professional judgment that Donald Trump manifests a serious mental illness that renders him psychologically incapable of competently discharging the duties of President of the United States. And we respectfully request he be removed from office, according to Article 4 of the 25th Amendment of the Constitution, which states that the president will be replaced if he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office." Meanwhile, there's always some pissant Republican out there who doesn't like the facts. In this case, it's Connecticut Republican Party Chairman J.R. Romano. Romani. No, J.R. Romano. He said the doctor said, "We're throwing ethical standards out the window because they cannot accept the election results." That didn't play very well with Dr. Gartner. Dr. Gartner said, "This notion that you need to personally interview someone to form a diagnosis actually doesn't make a whole lot of sense. For one thing, research shows that the psychiatric interview is the least statistical, reliable way to make a diagnosis." I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. So, because the argument there is the so-called Goldwater rule that was created after it became abundantly clear, well, to some, that Barry Goldwater was not playing with the full deck because he wanted to nuke the world. You know, this is stuff that arose during the 1964 presidential election between him and Lyndon Johnson. Oh, it was a much more innocent time, wasn't it? Yeah, not so innocent. This is less than a year after the murder of John Kennedy. Not exactly innocent, but Goldwater, now, compared to Trump, looks like the height of the breadth, depth of mental health, the very picture of mental health. But then again, Captain Queeg in the Caine Mutiny made Captain Ahab look like a man with another whaling ship captain. Right? Right. Hey, thank you very kindly, Bill. Bill in Florida. Thank you very kindly indeed. Bill just stepped up to help knock down the goal a little bit. We're down to $220 to go in fundraising for the evening. Another $20 and we'll just be down to the rate. We'll be finished with last week. So if you'd like to jump in, please feel free. There aren't any challenges or anything on the table. This is just a matter of trying to keep the bills paid. And bills need paying. Because, contrary to the thoughts of certain people, no, I am not secretly in the pay of the DNC. Jesus Christ. The things you hear. Okay, let's take a little break. If you would like to participate in the conversation, I welcome you to do so. Oh, wait, cowbell. Cowbell going out to the Mac. Heard your report about the mental health professionals and the MILF. Ah, wait a minute. It's not what you think. Mentally ill fascist in the White House. MILF, that's what the cowbell was for. The noted presidential historian David McCullough recently made public his disappointment with the MILF. McCullough listed the many reasons why the MILF should not be in office. In addition, this is a very uncommon practice by people of his stature as well. I need to find that. Thanks. Thanks for letting me know. Okay, little break, and we'll come back and do some conversation radio. How's that sound? This is conversation radio. This is the Horn. Listener supported. No advertisers. No big money checks coming in from John Podesta or Comet Ping Pong Pizza or Hillary. The devil! Hell, we're not even getting money from Bernie. No. The only thing that keeps this network going is you. And thank you for it. All right, back in a sec.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo and so much.
without care. Yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
I just love that song. I do. Always have. So, yeah, Gnarls Barkley. Crazy. Yep. It is 3 minutes past the hour. Let's run out to the somewhere probably on the 12 and 15 16ths and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hon. How are you?
Oh, it's Monday.
Yeah, and the Morans are just running wild, aren't they?
Oh, they are. I still got more.
Well, you know, I have a question. Speaking of Morans, I was listening to my local, you know, left-wing radio station, KPFK. And
you got those out there? How about that?
Well, there was a today was disturbing trend day. Today was beat up on anybody that's trying to get a Russian connection. I mean, they were going after Maxine Waters. They were going after Adam Schiff because, you know, there's no there with the Russians. And I'm like,
oh, only polarized people think there's something going on with the Russians.
Right. You know, and they were just going, they attacked Rachel Maddow because she's, they said that Rachel Maddow was red baiting.
Yeah, how can you red bait somebody who's not a communist? That's what I don't understand.
Right? It's like, I'm a baby liberal or whatever.
Easy, Tracy. Breathe, baby. Breathe.
But I just don't get this shit. I mean, there is a there. There is a, these people have, I don't know, am I wrong? Do they
no,
not have
there, no, no, there's or? Just, there's a contingent out there that if Vlad Pooty Poot, cuddly, snuggly, wonderful, loving, kind, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, Vlad Pooty Poot, if he stood up and said, oh, yes, definitely, I ordered the people to meddle in the American election process because I wanted the American people to give up on the idea of democracy.
if he said that, they'd... Well, clearly that's somebody who's not really Vlad Putipoot. That is a cheap imposter that was put forward by Hillary.
Mm-hmm. No, it's Obama.
Hillary and Obama.
Okay, thank you. Get it right.
Mm-hmm. And the only people who believed him is all polarized up.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. So those are my morons. I'm not even going to mention the names of the shows that I was listening to. But it's just, it was just a thing on KPFK this morning. And I was just like, what the fuck? I mean, if there is not a there, then why is everybody, you know, putting the brakes on there being an investigation? Why have we not seen his tax returns? If there's no there, what's happening with transparency, people?
People are silly for wanting to see Trump's tax returns. They're probably very complicated tax returns, and you wouldn't really learn anything from them anyway.
And he
won the election, so the people voted that they didn't care about seeing his tax returns.
Right. Well, see, I didn't vote for him. I was one of those people who didn't want.
You're one of those out of control Californians. I know.
I know. You know the apocalypse. I wasn't one of these assholes that was voting for the apocalypse because, you know, I'm going to vote for Jill Stein or I'm going to vote for Trump just to see what's going to happen because it's going to be funny. Or we're going to wake people up. We're going to get some woke folk. No, see.
Ooh, I'll tell you what, they elect Trump. I mean, everybody, they're going to be a general strike and people going to be in the streets. Uh-huh. And they're going to do more than show up and march on a Saturday and leave on Sunday. I mean, there's going to be thousands. Uh-huh. I mean, because of Trump, there's going to be thousands and tens of thousands, probably a million people just surrounding the Capitol and then we'll have a constitutional convention and we'll get rid of our duopoly and we'll have third parties and fifth parties. And somewhere down around 12th will be the Greens.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading an article. There was this website that I when I was doing research for school, and I was looking for black newspapers online, which has been a bitch. I read into this article on this website. Called Black Intelligence or something like that. And they had me all the way down to talk about how this is bullshit. We need, we need a revolution. We need it now. We don't need to be incremental in this bullshit. We need change and we need it now. We need, you know, the stuff that we talk about on the show. They had me until they started talking about the fucking Green Party. I'm like, God.
No, like, dude, like the Democratic Party is like so corrupt, and it's like, you know, full of like coastal elites, you know. And so, like, you know, the Democratic Party is going to have to be replaced by the Greens, and like, you know, like. 25 years from now, they may like get 5% of that and qualify for federal funding, and then we'll like have a revolution, you know? After we're all dead?
After we're all dead. How long have we been talking about? How long have the Green Party, you know, they're like the fucking, what is it? Groundhog. They stick their head up every 4 years, and then they disappear.
Yeah, every four years, they stick up their head and say, yeah, there's no difference between, like, the Democrats and the Republicans did. They're, like, just the same. And then the Republican gets in, you know. I remember Nader saying that there was no difference between George Bush and Al Gore, well, we sure learned, but that sure did bring on the apocalypse, didn't it, Tracy? Not
right. And we're still talking, and the gentleman that called earlier back in 1980, the fool that voted for Reagan. Oh, yeah. We're going to bring on
that worked.
Rev, but with Reagan. That worked. That's, you know, we're still suffering from that.
I know. And see, there is this, and I, for, look, I acknowledge the things that I've said in the past. And, you know, there's a free archive out there. I mean, I take ownership, right? And there are there are institutional, deep institutional problems with our two-party system.
Fuck yeah.
But they are so deep as to be irremediable. Absent.
Say that 5 times fast.
Yeah, no, I barely get it out the first time.
But it's
baked in, Tracy. It's baked in.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, I guess I have to say this every so often. The only way that there will be a replacement to the Democratic Party is if that replacement party becomes the second party out of it, and it'll still be a two-party system. I don't know why the little political babies can't understand that, but it's a damn fact, okay? It's a fact as proven throughout history. The only thing third parties do is fuck up the general election for whichever party they are nearest to. Ross Perot did it to George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
Nader did it to Gore. Jill.
To Hillary.
Yeah. And I don't care what Jill says. Her Green Party was closer ideologically to the Democrats than to the Republicans. Just like the Libertarians are closer to the Republicans than to the Democrats.
Right.
And so we can go on and on and on and on, and we can
back and forth,
and we can talk about how awful the two-party system is, and it sucks. It really sucks.
It sucks.
But it's
all we got.
At some point in time, if you want to change that, well, you either get in and change it from the inside out, or you do something like help elect Trump, and okay, it's coming now. Okay, things are going to change. Things are definitely going to change. And Bernie Sanders runs out to Nebraska and stumps for an anti-choice mayoral candidate.
Say who? Say what?
Now, see, there are times, and probably gonna get some email over this too.
Oh, you're in trouble now.
There are times that I am glad that I do not have a vagina. Because if I had read that story about Bernie going out and stumping for an anti-choice Democrat running for mayor, really? Bernie's out there doing mayoral rallies of Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know what I would have done. Because as a man who supports a woman's right to choose, I'm kind of pissed.
I see, now I'm done. It's like, see, for real, dog, it's one of those moments when you got to go, Bernie, you know, what you doing, homie? This is not what
it caused a goddamn firestorm. And, you know, 24 hours later, Bernie says... And 24 hours later, Bernie says, well, of course, you know, the Democratic Party has to stand for a woman's right to choose. It was a mayoral race.
That was a national.
I mean, that was after he stepped on his Johnson saying, well, you know, I don't know if John Ossoff in Georgia is a progressive or what. Some Democrats are progressive, some Democrats aren't. Now, this was only a candidate who had been almost the single laser beam focus of progressive and Democratic Party politics for, you know, about 4 weeks. And Bernie didn't know. Now, this isn't the Goon on Bernie show, okay? This is the, can we please And this is a this is a gender based reference, but it's an old one. And being female, I hope you'll forgive me for it, Tracy. Can I get some advance forgiveness?
I'm not even driving. I'm sitting in the car. I'm fine.
I just need a little advance forgiveness, okay? Just a little
forgiveness given.
Yeah. Okay. Could we, as the Democrats, progressives, could we please stop stepping on our own dicks?
Yeah.
Because see, the analogy doesn't work with girly stuff.
No, but you can, or just get our heads out of our asses.
Well, oh yes, there's that.
Because that's gender neutral. Everybody has an asshole.
That's true. It's really frustrating. Why is it that I know it's a fuck up, because all I got to do is tune in to that program on MSNBC in the morning, Scar and the Meat Puppet. Yeah, that may be one of the most brilliant terms Charlie Pierce ever came up with. All I got to do is tune into that and hear Joe Scarborough saying, "Democrats have to make room for differing opinions inside their caucus. I mean, if they can't support a pro-life Democrat, they're never going to win again." So let me just be clear here: the first group under the bus has to be a woman's women who want to maintain their right to choose. That's the first. Well, now.
Right. And this is, can we stay on message? I mean, isn't the whole purpose?
Because gosh almighty, Democrats just throw women's rights under the bus, all those economically anxious white men will come right back there in Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky. They'll come running right back and vote for Democrats all over again. Hey, you know what, Tracy?
We don't want them.
If we can just get rid of the 13th Amendment and reinstitute slavery, all them Southern white men will come back too.
But too.
Hoo-wee.
I was going to ask you the other day on Friday about, I had a constitutional question for you about the 14th Amendment. If you're born here, you're a citizen.
Yeah.
And equal protection under the law, that thing. Now, what was life like for Americans? We're not talking about black people because we didn't count. What was life? What did you have to do to become a citizen before the 14th Amendment? Were you considered a citizen? This is when I get confused about this. Because I was trying to understand it, because I was trying to read about it was the state saying if you were born in that state, you were a citizen of that state. And then it confused the fuck out of me.
Well, it's easy that it would have. But citizenship really applied to white folks. I mean, yeah, Indians weren't Indians weren't citizens, and slaves weren't citizens, and women were barely citizens. But people did tie their attachments more to their states than to their nation, unless they were going abroad, and frankly, not many of them went abroad. The only place that we really thought about American-ness was when it was time to field an army and, say, illegally invade Mexico.
Gotcha.
But the birthright citizenship was an absolute necessity in the post-Civil War era, because everybody knew that the first thing that the white folks were going to do in the South was to try to limit citizenship.
Right.
And that's why you get not born here, citizen. And if you ever wanted, if you ever want to get a real handle on where the heart and soul of the right wing lies in this country, ask them about birthright citizenship and see how long it takes them to say, "Oh, we got to get rid of that."
Yeah.
I mean, that's how come we wind up with a Kenyan Muslim for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when I was poking around on the interweb tubes. Oh my God, when I wrote 14th, I forgot what my search was, but Bob, the stuff that came up, I didn't open it, but it was like Breitbart and Heritage Foundation. All this stuff, all these links pulled up on my computer first. And I'm like, fuck you, Google.
Because those are the people that are out there polluting the internet with the issue. I'd say for every sane progressive analysis of birthright citizenship, there's probably 10,000 hits of you know, right wingers saying, yeah, that's where you get your anchor babies from.
Right. And how they're going to repeal the 14th Amendment. That's the first thing that's going to go. They'll
take care of that in the article. You know that Article 5 convention they keep saying that they want, and the only thing in the world they want to do is pass a balanced budget amendment? Well, that's going to be on the agenda. The gavel will be about to fall. So, Mr. President of the convention, I have an amendment I would like to add. Oh, well, I guess we can't gavel it closed. Okay, what's your amendment? I want to get rid of birthright citizenship, Mr. President. And the whole arena will go, woo, yeah, woo, get them.
Right.
I mean, is that outrageous an idea?
I mean, no, because that's what they want. They don't want the browning of America. They don't want people looking, you know, like, what is someone... Somebody gave this the greatest analogy ever about what America's going to look like in the next 25 years. It's going to be, you know, a lot more like people looking a lot like my son Alex.
And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, at least they'll be able to stay out in the sun long.
Yeah, rub it in, Tracy. Rub it in.
Well.
Rub it in, baby.
You know, there's a little something about moaning, Bob. You know, I mean, not that I don't have to watch, you know, I still, if I'm staying out any time, you know, long periods of time, I have to put on sunscreen and stuff like that because, not because I don't want to get darker, it's because, you know, I have skin. So, this, you know, black folks can get skin cancer too, just not as quickly as, you know. And you said it. I'm just repeating what you said about getting sunburned by the light bulb in the refrigerator.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, I'm. Just
I stick my hand in the refrigerator under that bulb, and it comes out looking like what Paul Atreides thought his hand was going to look like when it was in the box, and the Gom Jabbar was at his neck. Never. It's
See?
A Dune thing. Yeah.
I mean, when the chances of you going outside, you know, your skin is going to look like, you know, a vampire hitting the sun, you know.
Yeah, I had to make my vampire in the sun noise, right.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, and it's not your fault, Bob, you know. It's not your fault that you're challenged by the melanin. It's not your fault. You were born that way.
Well, I mean, you know, 10,000 years ago, we didn't need it. We was up there near the Arctic Circle chasing reindeer all day long. Poor reindeer.
Right. It was cold. It was wet. There was wet. You guys didn't even see the fucking sun.
Just sitting there, probably gnawing on raw reindeer fat just to keep the lipids up so we don't freeze to death in the winter.
Right. Reindeer jerky for everybody. Yummy. So it's like, you know, you didn't need it, but you guys decided to come over here where there was, you know, sunshine. And stuff.
Well, we worked our way down. Yeah. We worked our way down to Scotland for a while and England and.
Yeah.
Not known for its sunniness.
No. I love white folks in like Africa, you know, when I'm watching. When I'm reading about colonization and stuff and white folks in Africa and, you know, the West Indies and stuff, and I'm like, how do they deal with the sun?
Oh, no. That's like me getting off the lib boat there in Grand Turk and just going walk about for a little bit. You know, want some conch fritters, you know, want some fried plantains, that kind of thing. And I could almost hear people in the background going, look at a white man without no hat. How long you think it take for him to get third degree burn? You know, it, silly white man.
You went out without a hat,
Tom? I didn't have a hat. Silly white man. Let's give him a beer or three. Let him fall asleep in the sun.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Then we'll sell him a bottle of our fake aloe for $35.
Right. Wow. Did she have to get skin grafts up at that
point? Oh, shit, I looked like Captain Christopher Pike. I did, with everything but the beeping chair. My face fell off at dinner one night.
I shouldn't laugh, but this shit is hilarious. I don't see when I see white people outside without any kind of protection. I mean, back when we were younger, you know, the studies weren't out there. Nobody really understood just what the sun could do to you. Okay, other than, you know, but now there's study. Now people know. But now when I see white people running around outside with, you know, no hats on, no sunglasses, and stuff like that, and I'm like, y'all stupid.
Yeah, but see, when I was little, I got the cutest little freckles on my cheeks and up across the bridge of my nose. People said, you got the cutest little freckles.
But I bet you...
All my life, I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to keep trying. I used to take PABA pills, you know, PABA, because it's supposed to help your resistance to the sun. And I think, you know, okay, I'll just go out for a little bit and I'll build up my resistance and I'll tan a little bit. No. Burn, blister, peel, white.
White.
Burn, blister, peel, white. Burn, blister, peel, white.
There was nothing you could do.
Yeah.
In other words, I get a better tan than you.
You're born with a better tan than me.
Well, no, I tan. I go, you know, I think I've told this story with my ex-fiance, and I took off my bathing suit top, and he's like, you're tan. I'm like, motherfucker, I got skin. Black people tan, too. You know, just because you didn't know that, you know, just because people under the illusion that just because I'm dark skinned that I don't get darker. Yes.
Yeah, that's almost unfair. that's like melanin taunting.
It is. I'm just taunting you with my melanin.
The other part of it is there's some math involved too, Tracy. You know, you pick up that bottle of sunscreen, it gives you 60 times your body's natural protection from the sun. Now I suck at math, but 60 right. times zero is fucking zero.
Still zero.
You can dip me by the heel in that crap, and it's just gonna burn right through.
Who is that? Achilles? Or dip you like Achilles?
Yeah, that's right.
And the only part of you, unfortunately, all of you is vulnerable.
Yeah, I'll get 19th degree burns on my heel, but the rest of them will just be fourth or fifth.
Right. She used to say, you know, like, you know, even with Jan, I have to get on her case, you know, because she actually, when she tans, she... I guess there's some olive skin happening with her. She has some melanin in her because she gets a nice tan. And I was teasing her the other day. I'm like, honey, it's time for you to go outside, sit out and put you some stuff on. But she won't put on suntan lotion or sunscreen. With the sunscreen, you can still get tan, yes? It's a sunblock that's supposed to keep you from getting darker, right?
No, sunblock is supposed to keep you from getting burnt.
Burnt, okay. See, I don't know these things. I just know that I'm supposed to put shit on so I don't, you know, I don't get sunburned. And yes, black people get sunburned.
And the funny thing is, I got a sister who tans right up.
Seriously?
Oh yeah, she was when she was a teenager back in the '60s and stuff. She's hardcore. She's out on the she'd be laying out in the backyard, you know, rubbing down with baby oil and iodine.
Yeah, that's Jan. She'll get the, you know, the banana boat, the, you know, the stuff that may, I think that George Hamilton uses or something. And you just, you know, you get, I might, that, or whatever, you know, what's his name, 45 uses. Oh, speaking of him, and you were talking about the, what was that book, The Sound and the Fury?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Don't forget of Mice and Men.
Well, no, but I mean the way that Faulkner captured the stream of consciousness.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lenny didn't. You didn't really get a stream. You're right. You didn't really get a stream of consciousness with.
No.
With Lenny.
Lenny was just slow.
Didn't really get a. He was just slow. You didn't get a stream of consciousness. You didn't. You didn't. I. You know, there is a difference. There was no stream of consciousness. Definitely not.
And the same thing applies for Faulkner's "As I Lay Dying." Again, narrated by an idiot. It will drive you crazy trying to read that book. It's like watching a Trump press conference.
Did you hear about how he barged in on the Purple Heart ceremony and told a guy congratulations?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not thank you for your service.
Congratulations, you've won the Purple Heart, buddy.
And you lost a leg in
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when the story came back during the Reign of Error, the story that came out about the woman who went in for breast cancer surgery for a mastectomy.
Oh.
And they mastectomized the wrong breast. And then they had to go in and do the mastectomy on the breast they meant to remove in the first place. And it was during a great debate over tort reform. And George W. Bush said, "Well, see that she won life's lottery."
Life's lottery?
Mm-hmm. Because she got to sue her doctor.
But now they're trying to get rid of people being able. You know, we have people since we have what's his name Gorsuch. You know. They're going to try to make sure, well, you got, you know, going to try to make sure you don't have any protections about being able to sue your doctors if they fuck you up. Because, you know. Oh, there was this guy on, now there was one good thing about KPFK this today, because this guy was talking about Bill O'Reilly. And he played a stream of some of the, I mean, how can you pick out some of these gems of, you know, he's been on the air for, what, 20 years or so. But he was picking out these things that Bill O'Reilly, you know, have said over the years, you know, about, you know, black people and women and, you know, because apparently there's an article that came out on Huffington Post about why in the world did it take so long to fire his ass. Well, because he's rich and he's white. And he's, even the, you know, it was like they said about Trump, the same thing they said about him. He's a god-awful person, but he makes us lots of money. He's great for the ratings.
Well, and you know, the same thing was pointed out this morning. I heard it in passing. I had to get up and get going because I had the doctor's appointment. Can't wait.
How'd that go?
I can't wait to see the bill for that. No hard and fast answers, but you know, I at least got told, yeah, look, you know, as long as your spleen doesn't rupture, you're not dying.
Gee, what was this? Thanks, guys.
It's gonna hurt like a son of a bitch, but you're not dying. So I'm like, well, cool. Yeah. Somewhere along the way, though, you got to learn to eat again. Said, thanks. Go to medical school for that, did you?
How much weight have you lost?
Oh, I'm 46 pounds.
Well, I'm 4 pounds behind you. We're 42.
And so, yeah, but you're trying. This is having an unintended consequence. I think I'm going to not be type 2 diabetes pretty soon.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked for that.
Is that?
Anyway, I had to get up, and I'm sitting there watching a little bit of Scar and the Meat Puppet. And I heard.
I don't know why that makes you laugh.
I know, but it's the meat puppet part that gets you. At least that's what gets me. Yeah.
You know that movie,
The Fifth Element. A lot of people say it's terrible. I kind of enjoy watching it every now and then.
I enjoy it.
I think it was inspired by the animated taxi cab segment of the first heavy metal movie. But no, go ahead.
No, if nothing, just to see Chris Tucker interact with Bruce Willis.
That's a thing around here. If I want to know if some member of my family understands me, I look at him, go green. And they go super green. It just stuck. But no, there's that one moment where the cops come for Bruce Willis. This is a police inspector, whatever. Are you a human being? And Bruce Willis simply answers, "No, I am a meat popsicle." And I always think of that when I hear Scar and the Meat Puppet. But one of the things they were pointing out is that, and it's like it's this no lose situation. The for-profit media largely helped Trump get the necessary exposure to make it look like he was inevitable and in the Republican field. And then he can squint in the meat puppet. Thank you, Randy and PA. Not Scar, squint. Squint in the meat puppet, because he does. He squints. But they gave him all the free PR. CNN, MSNBC,
and the billions, right?
Just falling on CBS, right? Falling all over themselves, Fox, to give him free stuff that they would never give to a mainstream political candidate.
Nope.
So they helped create it. They helped create his presidency. And then, in turn, he becomes president. And CNN's ratings are up. Fox's ratings are up. MSNBC's ratings are up. New York Times ratings, circulation, up. Donald Trump is the best thing in a generation to happen to the news media. And I'm just reminded of that one of Bart Kopp's laws from way back. And yes, I still miss Bart Kopp. Where he said, if somebody makes a mistake and it makes them $1 million, expect them to keep making that mistake.
Mm-hmm. Over. Hey, I wish my mistakes made me $1 million. Don't you, Bob?
I could use a couple.
You know, I mean, I'm not even going to be greedy. I'll just take one mistake. I can, you know, sit in the mill. I'd be fine. I mean, a meal out here won't go as far as the meal out where in West Virginia, but I won't be in line for no food stamps anytime soon. I mean, I couldn't buy a house.
No.
But I could buy a really nice condo.
There we go.
Barely.
So, it's... Is it any wonder? I mean, what would happen to the numbers for the for-profit media if Trump was to suddenly not be president anymore? I mean, it all goes back to what Les Moonves at CBS said. Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
Right.
They don't give a good goddamn what happened. All the hand-wringing, all the pearl-clutching, Tracy. They don't give a rat's ass what happens to this country. And then they go out and they do these damn features on economic anxiety among the white people. And it's like, wow, sure wish that economic anxiety had been a thing back when it was happening to somebody besides white folks, I'll bet.
Well, it's the same thing, you know, now that heroin is an issue, there's an epidemic. For real? And we got to, you know, we want to be more, you know, what is the, show compassion. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying not to show compassion to people who have opiate addictions and stuff like that. But Bob, you know where I'm about to go with this one.
I know. No, I know exactly where you're going to go with it. It was a scourge upon our nation.
Right.
And it must be dealt with swiftly and surely by our justice system. These animals these super predators have to be brought to heel.
To heel. Because, see, my question is, last time I checked, you know, especially like where I grew up in, you know, in the crack wars of South Central back in the 80s and shit. Last time I checked, these Negroes didn't have, you know, planes to bring the cocaine in. Last time I checked, I didn't see any landing strips.
No. Sorry, no. That wasn't.
Didn't see those, Bob.
I know.
Didn't see them.
Nope, weren't there. Weren't there.
Where did it come from?
Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes, we're told.
Oh, don't. Yeah, just the Mexicans, not the freedom fighters, and not, you know, in Nicaragua and
no, that couldn't and Eugene Hasenfuss didn't have a damn thing to know, and there was nobody running cocaine from Central America to California. No. And of course, rock and crack, you know, that's a terrible, terrible drug. What's it? Hang on. Wait a minute. You got a line over there?
Ah, yeah, that rock cocaine's terrible.
It's terrible.
Ah, I can't feel my nose.
You know, how many deviated septums happen? You know, it's like how many people lost the bridge of their noses because, you know, they snorted it away.
Well, that was the bad shit.
Right. So it's like, you know, all this, you know, what happened to the economic, where was the economic anxiety when Detroit went belly up?
Mitt Romney was screaming, let it burn. And the Republicans were hollering, let it burn. But you know what? Some of the people who did wind up getting hurt out of it, even though there was a bailout, those are the very people who are getting in. I got a lot of economic anxiety. Huh. Wonder who did that. Yeah. I saw a story earlier today. I saw a story earlier today, Tracy, about some of the carrier workers in Talibandiana.
Oh, how they doing?
Yeah. See. Let's see, headline. I love it. Yeah. How they doing?
Oh, please do. Oh, let's.
Oh, still be there. Still, got to still be there. There it is. Headline, I feel used up. Carrier workers aren't happy about losing jobs after Trump's deal.
Oh, for real,
dog? Yeah, story in the New York Times. 56-year-old Jim Schall doesn't want to complain, but things aren't going well. I'm a routine guy, and I'm not boo-hooing, but I feel used up. You're my president! Unfortunately, Jim isn't alone. His colleague Pat is still working for Carrier, but with production ending just after Christmas, she knows her days are numbered. She's been with the company for 40 years after graduating from high school, as did her daughter, who's now 33 years old. I love my job, she said, but it's all I've ever known. Most of the workers don't blame Trump for being unable to save their jobs, despite the fact that he took credit for doing so. 27-year-old veteran Tammy Barnett told the New York Times, I support him 100%. I was very pleased he saved the jobs in Indianapolis. Do I wish he could have saved mine? Absolutely. But he did his best. 55-year-old Susan Cropper said, I'm glad he stepped in, but it's a letdown. Still glad I voted for Trump, though.
These people are just really hornswoggled, aren't they? Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. Or you could say dumb AF.
Dumb as fuck?
Yes. I mean, I keep seeing woke AF and stuff like that on Twitter. So,
you know. Oh, woke as fuck?
Yeah, I'm trying to be hip.
Honey, I stopped trying that. I wasn't even hip when it was hip to be hip. I've never been. I have to go ask people, and it's even worse because my son is like not hip either. So it's really bad because I came and asked him when they're slang and stuff. He looks at me like, what are you asking? So I have to go ask other black people. I'm like, I don't know.
Well, that's like how long it took me to figure out what Yash Queen came from. But I finally did. I had to threaten to throw my daughter out of the house if I ever heard it come out of her mouth again. But I did finally find out.
Right.
Because it was, I mean, there's just these little things, because I live by my ears, and there are these little things that just drive me crazy. One of them is my son doing his little Nicky voice, from that god-awful, what's his name, Sandler movie.
The Adam Sandler movie?
Oh, yeah. He does that voice, and it's pitch-perfect, spot-on. And I have to threaten to beat him. Daddy doesn't like that voice, son.
Son, I love you, but I will.
Yas Queen. Yes. By the way, Michael and Madison said, who the hell are these people that say The Fifth Element's terrible? That's a thing? Oh, yeah, that's a thing. Oh, it's a terrible movie. Terrible.
I have to, I have to watch it at least maybe once a year.
Well, we do because I told Agnes a long time ago that she's the Fifth Element. She's a supreme being.
Well, she is. I've never met Agnes, but from I know one day I'm going to remember you. The chances of me getting your happy pink ass out to L.A. is not seems like it's not going to happen.
Oh, come on, admit it. You want to see me go out there and burn. It'll be a two-person riot. I'll be standing there with no shirt on, and Tracy be standing there yelling, "Burn, baby, burn!" Yeah.
And getting tan, just to mock you, and be like, "What's wrong with my tan?"
Let's go for shrimp tacos now.
Yeah, let's go for
because I'll be eating shrimp tacos again by then.
Right. Yes. Yes, see, this is a fiendish. This is what your body's doing. It's a fiendish plot. So you lose a shit ton of weight, and then get your stomach together. So when you do come out here, you can have the deep fried shrimp tacos.
Yeah, but honest to God, I think my stomach shrunk to the size of like a ping pong ball.
Oh, it's bad. I tried to eat. We had a Jan marinated a tri tip roast yesterday, and Alex put it on the barbecue. And it was really good. It was kind of tough. It wasn't their fault. It was just, don't you hate it when you get a beautiful cut of meat and it smells good and it tastes good and everything, but it's tough. It's as tough as shoe leather.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Isn't it the most disappointing thing? It's like, really?
Well, maybe in a day or so we'll get Todd on here and he can help you remedy that.
Yeah, because I'm like, It's a wonder that it's a good thing I don't have your home number, because I would have called you yesterday and said, Bob, or I don't have time.
Yeah, but see, if you call me after it's already done and cooked and tough as shoe leather, there ain't no helping that.
I know. But it was perfect. I mean, the smoke, you know, the entrails of the smoke and the meat and all that. It was beautiful.
Yeah, not slow enough. Not slow enough. Not slow enough.
That's what I told. See,
heat too high, time too short.
Yeah, see, I'm the one who used to dance the barbecue, but I wasn't feeling well yesterday. My stomach was doing that thing. And so I'm usually doing what it is, the barbecuing. And it's my fault because I really haven't taught Alex about, you know, barbecuing and stuff.
Got to pass the wisdom. Got to pass the wisdom.
Got to pass the wisdom. And I, you know, because if my wits had been about me, I would have, you know, like you said, low and slow. I would have just had it kind of just smoked it to it kind of thing. But it, you know, Jan was like, well, you did it, you know, and I said, he was really upset. I said, no, it's okay. Mom wasn't out there watching you. And like you said, he probably, the fire was too high and he cooked it too fast. Because, you know, tri-tip is a thing to behold. And it was beautiful. I mean, I don't even know what Jan seasoned it with or what, it was marinating for like 6 hours yesterday. So, you know, I'm going to have to work on
it. Yeah, but that ain't necessarily going to tenderize it. Not necessarily.
No. And that's what I tell people, just because you leave it sitting and marinating, does that mean it's going to tenderize? But you shouldn't have to tenderize a tri-tip, right?
Well, I mean, the marinade's a good idea, but really, you can't hurry
it.
You cannot hurry it. And the same thing goes for like a top sirloin roast or something like that. Mm-mm, can't hurry it.
You know, it's like what. It's about at least a
now when you're dealing with tough something that will approach a remedy is to try to slice it as absolutely thin as you possibly can.
And that's what we did. And that's what we did.
That's where you run out and buy the and I know this is heresy. That's where you go out and buy the electric knife. Because you can get thin with that electric knife that you can't get with, you know,
a regular knife.
Right.
You know, and so that's, you know, we don't have an electric knife in the house.
I think they're 12 bucks or something like that.
Yeah, and those are those things that, I mean, we have one, and I can't believe that we've been in that house for almost a year. And we're still unpacking.
Of course.
It's like, it's these things. It's like, you know, like I just, you know, because somebody's like, well, how long, when did Prince die? And I could tell you exactly where I was. I was at the house with the workmen and sitting in the middle, in the middle of the house with no furniture and just a chair and crying my eyes out. These poor Hispanic workmen looking at me like, you know, señora, you know, and try to speak to me in Spanish, and my Spanish sucks. Their English is better than my Spanish. And I was trying to explain to them how Prince had died, and I showed them on my phone, and they're like, "Oh!" And then they knew why I was crying. But it was just like, "Wow!" I still can't believe that. It's one of those things when people like Prince die, or Carrie Fisher, and Debbie Reynolds within a day of each other, and stuff like that. People like that, Gene Wilder, when they die, and we still have people alive, and I'm not even going to name the people alive that we, you know, because I'm not going to wish death on anybody, but there are certain people who are still alive that it wouldn't crush me.
I'll name them. Yeah, you look up and you go, that damn Cheney's still alive.
Right. Why is he still alive? Why? The man is the devil. He is Satan. They say Hillary Clinton is Satan. That man is fucking Satan personified. And he's still alive. He's going to outlive us all, Bob. He's just that evil. He is just that evil that he will outlive us all.
Well, all he's got to do is go and, you know, prowl the streets of Memphis or something and find a new heart. Or, you know, maybe China. Yeah. Hey, got to get out of here, Tracy. By the way, I'm VT Blom in the chat room reminds me, if you ever have another tough meat situation, cutting the meat diagonally across the grain helps break up the toughness, too. So there's that.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Later, Tracy.
Good night, Bob.
Good night, Tracy.
Good night.
Bye. Nobody quite like Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from L.A. And just a quick note, thank you very kindly to Keith for jumping in. We now have $210 to go in fundraising this evening. This has been, well, we'll be at 410 tomorrow evening. So cross your fingers, or if you'd like to help out, not having a $410 fundraising hole, that's great. Not having to turn on the reverb and get Lassie to rescue us from the well, that sort of thing. And hey, look, there's Clarity in the waning moments of the program. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob, I just wanted to mention that Gary Webb didn't shoot himself in the back of the head with a shotgun when he committed suicide.
Right.
And that maybe some journalists don't want to get too much into the drug trade, and that they'll take simple solutions like Trump saying in his AP interview that all we have to do is build a wall and we won't have a drug problem anymore.
Yeah, I know you read the interview too, because you were the first one to go, yeah, that's Benji.
Anyway, I just wanted to shout out to the ancestor, because Gary Webb put his life on the line and lost.
Yeah, he did. He did. I'm glad you did mention that.
And, you know, the whole crack thing, you know, back to who you just talked to, you know, that drug devastated the black community, and the mandatory minimums came in and all that stuff that has basically wrecked the black family. And now they're going after Latino families.
You're absolutely right. There's nothing to add to that. Thank you, Clarity.
Love you, Bob. Keep it up.
Gonna try. Later. Bye. And the flash just went across my screen. Neil Gorsuch got to go, yeah, kill him! Because Arkansas has offed another person with the happy acquiescence of Ann's boy, Neil. And so we find ourselves at the end of the program, the end of More Ann Monday. In my father's house are many More Anns, and we got to some of them, but not all of them. But that's okay, because Titanic Tuesday will soon be upon us, and we'll start marching through there, too. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time in this little conversation, in whatever means you do it. Thank you for your kind notes and your tweets and your Facebooking and your emails and your calls and all of that. And thank you for your participation in the chat room. You really do. You make us a very special community here. Thank you to everybody who contributes to keep this program on the air. It is a far smaller number than the people who listen. And I thank you very kindly for carrying that weight. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Hope you're enjoying yourself, Steve from Georgistan, in a secluded, undisclosed vacation location. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.